Today it's Wednesday, the 22nd of July, and I'm at Johnsonville. No, it's not Johnsonville. Granada Village. Talking with Rosina and Max Fuhr. Yeah. And so I'd like to ask them both how they came to come to New Zealand and when they came.
They came to New Zealand in 1949. Long time ago, and I had a job to go to in the Waiho Harbour, the Dalefield Dairy Company.
Oh, yeah.
I worked there 2 seasons and worked a few other jobs in the off seasons in Wellington and spa downers in Bacardi, and in between from.
So you've just told me that you actually left New Zealand in 52, was it?
52, yes.
Oh, and Rosina also said that you were cheesemaker by trade. Is
yes,
this,
yes.
All your family were into cheesemaking?
Oh, my father anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mrs. Black's home.
Yes, yes. I mean, from here I went to the States for 2 years. Was worked in Oregon in a cheese factory.
Mm.
And went back to Switzerland in 1954. Met Rosina and worked for my father for a year and come back to New Zealand in 1955. That's, I went back to Dalefield, to the dairy factory there. Dalefield, yeah. Dalefield, that's just before Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
And I worked 2 more seasons there.
Mm.
Done the same time actually, a dairy diploma course. Done three winters of about 11 to 13 weeks.
This is through Messi?
Through Messi, yeah.
And back in those days, when you came as a married couple, you needed accommodation, you needed a guarantee for accommodation.
Yeah.
You didn't need a job, but I mean, Max had a job to go to.
I mean, I wrote to the manager in the dairy factory, said I'm coming back to New Zealand, need somebody to guarantee a house, and he guaranteed or accommodation, and he, because they had about 15 houses, the factory, and he just guaranteed that we would have accommodation when we come, and so I worked 2 more years there.
So that was your foot into the settling in New Zealand?
Yes, yes. Yes. The first time when they came, I didn't need that because I was single.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the difference, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm. But when you were married, you had to have accommodation. Mm. Yes. You didn't even have to have a job the first time. I got the permit. I applied in 1948 and got the permit in very quick time. At that time, it was very simple to get to New Zealand, very, and I bought the tickets. I was never an assistant immigrant. By my own trips coming out. And,
so you came by sea, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
Long voyage
on the Rangitiki.
Rosina and me come on the Rangitiki from London to Wellington, but I come in 1949 from Genoa in Italy to Sydney.
Oh.
On an Italian and the immigrant transport boat for Italians.
Mm-hmm.
But they were in mass accommodation in the holds.
Mm-hmm.
And the boat had 14 cabins for 6 people, and I was one of the cabin passengers.
You were?
Yeah, I was one of the cabin passengers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were 6 in one cabin, 3 sets of bunks.
Yeah. I was thinking perhaps you were onto a good thing, but it wasn't too. It would have been very squashed, wouldn't it?
Oh, I was 21 and it was a big adventure.
It was all something.
Oh, yes, yes.
So your voyage was a bit better than that?
Yes, oh yes. Oh, yeah. We came because there were not many passages when we were coming, And so we had actually a first-class cabin on the Rangitiki, mm-hmm. which the price was the same as tourist class to from
Italy to Sydney and then the Wanganella coming across.
Was the same?
The two tickets together, tourist class, were the same as the Rangitiki first class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And on the Rangitiki first class, we could get a boat very quick within about 3 months. Mm-hmm. Where the other ones would have been up to a year to wait.
We had a lovely cabin, we had two portholes, mm-hmm. and we had the portholes open mm-hmm. the whole journey mm-hmm. for five weeks, bar the last night before New Zealand, because
The southerly was blowing.
Oh, yeah, and so the waves were coming into the portholes, so we had to close the portholes.
Yeah. So you got your first southerly before you even
got
New Zealand.
But arriving, it came in during the night into the harbour, because we were in bed. But in the morning when we got up, it was on the 19th of May, 1955. And the sun was coming up.
It's a nice sunny, clear day.
And it looked like the whole hillside of Wellington was lit up, because the sun was shining in all them windows. You see, so it was like they were, all the houses were lit up. It was a beautiful sight.
So you still remember it so clearly. And then you went up to Daleford from...
Stayed one night in Wellington. A friend had a place up in Holloway Road. And we stayed the first night in Holloway Road. And then the next day we went up to Carlton.
So you came back down when you got a job at General Foods? Is that why you came back down to Wellington?
From Dalefield, mm-hmm. 2 years later I went to Taranaki, to Elton, and I was involved in the first factory making continental cheese. I made Gruyère cheese. I was first assistant for the factory which made Glühwein cheese, and while I was there we started making other cheeses. We made Glühwein cheese and Romano cheese.
So we
Swiss
were,
cheese, yeah.
We weren't into those sorts of cheeses before you?
No, not in New Zealand, no. The Danish chap, Laurie Stevenson, he was really the instigator of all that. I already knew him in New Zealand in 52, 51, I got to know him. And he tried then to start the factory himself, but nobody could actually start the factory in New Zealand for cheese factory. Yeah. All cheese factories had to be cooperative.
So you mean an individual couldn't go out and start off his own little...
But in Elton, the New Zealand Renner Company, which was owned by all the dairy companies, started making... I had made an opening to start a cheese factory for other cheeses. Mm-hmm. Because there was also the 1957, for instance, the Nordmeyer's Black Budget. It was a bad year for New Zealand, it was a downturn. And they were becoming aware that just cheese and cheddar and butter all going to England, if England doesn't pay anymore or doesn't pay the price, we've got to look for something else. And that's why they started actually there experimenting with new cheese. And Laurie Stevenson, which worked in the Massey College Research Factory, but he was a cheesemaker from Denmark, but he worked there for about 2 years or 3 years. And from there they started the little factory in Elton.
So it's like what they call adding value to it now, isn't it? It's not just ordinary old product.
You're trying to
create something new for the export.
Well,
that's groundbreaking, isn't it?
But it was... Laurie and me felt after 2 years it was a dead-end job. because things within about a year or 2 years, the battle fat prices for England improved again. The prices went up again, and in this little factory where we were trying to do the best, they hardly tried to sell the cheese we made.
So it
probably wasn't easy to sell, because today, I think today we were too early for the Kiwis to make blue wine cheese and Gruyere cheese. It was just a bit early, and also New Zealand never had to sell cheese. They didn't have to go out to sell. England bought everything you made.
So 9 cents of tomato.
Yeah. So there was actually nobody here which actually had to sell cheese on the export market or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And through that it was, for us it was frustrating, because in the second year, part of the production we had to melt down into 4 gallon tins. Mm-hmm. And making good cheese and then have to melt it down in 4 gallon cheese to sell it to a factory for cheese crackers or stuff like that was sacrilege.
Yeah. And you'd be saying, well, why am I doing this?
That's why Laurie Stevenson actually got, I was the first one to leave there. I left and I saw an advertisement, Tip-Top were looking for a man with a massive college diploma, and so I applied for the job and I got the job, you know. And I know Laurie Stevenson because I talked to him, I talked about this, as I'm saying that now. He left about a year later and went to Australia.
Mm. A few years later you would have been really in demand, wouldn't you?
Yes. So many years. The factory actually kept going. They got people in from Switzerland, a cheesemaker, and they got one from Denmark and from different countries. They always stayed about a year or two. The factory kept going. In the 70s, when they changed to Galaxy cheese, Galaxy today, the same factory, except it's much bigger now, makes Galaxy brand cheese and makes Ferndale brand cheese and
Mainland.
Is made all there now today. But today it's naturally, we were about 6 people working, and today I don't know, there may be 100, you know.
Could only see you here so far, and whether it would have been worth
and
it.
And in 1981, the law got changed in New Zealand. And private people could start making, start a cheese factory.
I don't know anything about this. Yeah. So it was all sort of locked down.
Yeah, that's why we have this, you know, Lindale, and there's actually quite a lot of small cheese factories around today, you know.
So we came down to Wellington
and
Meg started working at Tip-Top.
Yeah.
What was your job there? I mean, they wanted a messy diploma.
They first, I was just an assistant on the floor to the production manager, but a year later they told me I was going to be called assistant production manager. So I stayed till 19. I started there in 59, and in 63 I left. Mm. Yes.
So it was a bit of a jump from cheese to ice cream? Or?
Oh, it was a bit, but it was also dairy industry. I mean, as far as pasteurizing and cleanliness and all that sort of stuff was more or less the same.
So that was your underlying sort of qualification?
Yes. I had qualification there from Switzerland, because I made an apprenticeship there for 3 years and went to a trade school.
How did you like working at General Foods. Did you enjoy it there? Or,
well, at the start it I did, but...
The challenges wouldn't have been all that great, would they? After exciting cheese making.
It's a part I don't actually not even like talking about. It because I think the people on salaries were badly treated. That's my statement. You know.
You won't sort of go there then?
No.
Shall we switch?
If you turn it off for a moment.
So it was the poultry farm that took you out to Ohio Valley, or was there some other reason?
Yes, no, I bought the milk on.
Oh, the milk farm.
I bought the milk on and had the milk on in Johnsonville. Yes, and I done that for about 4.5 years. And then Frankenfeld said to me, there's a poultry farm for sale out in Ohio, and we went to have a look at it, and we went to the auction and I bought it.
I sort of hazy, can't actually remember the poultry, but it was serious
there were about 2,700 chooks there.
And it's very serious, isn't it?
People called Wesley.
Yeah, I remember.
They owned it,
I went to school with Douglas. So you carried on when they moved out?
Yes,
we carried on for a while, but it was the time when there were a lot of diseases in chooks. One was called leprosis. And if you bought 1,000 die-olds, if you ended up with 600 lying, you were lucky. The other ones died in the first 6 months. So it wasn't that good a business, and I started looking for something else, and I saw an advertisement franchise for building fences, timber fences. Woodwork was always a bit hobby for me, actually, so I could easily build fences, there's no problem to me, and so I bought into that franchising and built fences for about 10 years, all over Wellington. Built practically all the fences for Jordan Park. In them 10 years I was there, because I got into it quite quick in Jordan Park, and after I had done a few fences, I didn't even have to go on court anymore. He just told me there's another house to do next, up there, and do the next, and so I done them all.
So
you're doing
sort of fences with palings,
All sorts of. I done lots of different timber fences. I also told people, you tell me if you have something special in mind, I build it. I got timber from the Foxton Timber Mill, because it was very reasonable from up there. I could order any sort of timber.
And you enjoyed working with your hands?
Oh, yes, I liked it, yes.
Did you work with timber when you were back home? Is that when you sort of started?
No, I never did. That actually, my father had a small business, and there was a little bit of timber work for packing cases and so involved in it, and that's what we did. But otherwise, I wasn't never actually worked in it.
But you sort of picked up the hammer when you were quite young, probably.
Some of us were, probably with women too, they're very handy with needles or with whatever.
Try anything. Turn your hand to And while you're down the valley, you started the Swiss Club. Then shall we move on to
We were involved in the Swiss Club, which was meeting then at the time. In Brooklyn. They had
just rented a hall in Brooklyn. Brooklyn Community Hall.
And because we gave up chickens, we had empty sheds, and so some of the Swiss guys said, couldn't we? The Brooklyn Hall was being renovated, and we had a bowling alley, and they had to move it out. So couldn't we store that in your sheds? That was okay. And then, of course, the next thing was, couldn't we put it up?
Because the sheds were empty, so we put the bowling alley up.
Yeah. And one thing led to another, and then
That started about in 72. In 1975, I said, why could we just make something better out of this old shed? And and we had an IGM and the club, and it was decided that I would pay for material, but we done all the work, not just us, the club done the work together.
We done 10 weekends of
Saturday and Sunday, always about 20 people there, changing the chicken shed into what it got. Yeah.
Because I remember the school going to functions there, and it was really quite beautiful, and wasn't it? Great Timberland.
Yes. And also the Ladies Guild, they had functions in there, and it was used, not so straight as Swiss Club, it was used by the Valley actually also.
Few weddings and things
So out of the chalk shed came rather beautiful Swiss Club, which was rather nice. So your Swiss Club members were all quite good at their hands.
Lots of them. And also we had actually plumber
and electrician
and bricklayer and bricklayer members. Yeah. Tradesmen, which were,
builders.
Builders, yeah.
Joiners.
So, in that respect, we have practically all the trades for building club members, that helped naturally a lot.
And did you have Swiss members coming from, say, Taranaki? That's what, Taranaki down to? Did you have, someone told me you had sort of competitions.
Taranaki Club that's still going on.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, the Taranaki Club visits us in February.
Mm-hmm.
They come down for 2 days or 3 days, and the following year we go to Taranaki. That's still going on. Yeah. Yes.
And we compete in playing cards. It's a game very similar to what they tell us, 500, if you know that. We do playing skittles, we do shot put, and we do...
But not a little ball, a 10-kilo stone.
And then they do shooting. Then the Auckland and Hamilton play against each other, and in June on Queensbird Side weekend, the winners out of them two come together, because the Swiss Society has got a meeting.
All the Swiss club together in New Zealand.
And have got a meeting on Queensbird Side weekend, and there they play out, and the winners get a beautiful big
cowbell.
It just
moves on to whoever wins it.
Yes, it's sort of.
Are there many Swiss clubs in New Zealand then, or are there four regions?
There are actually five.
Okay.
Yeah, there's Taranaki is the oldest one, in Hamilton, Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch. Mm. Yeah. But Christchurch, it's quite an expensive to get from Christchurch to here, because you have either to fly or go by boat, so they occasionally some members come up, but we don't actually have direct we don't visit there, and they don't visit here, only odd people which might be traveling the same time or
Do you all come together at June, or was it just the sort of finalists of the...
No, the clubs come together, but actually and every year it's... 1 year it's in Wellington, then in Taranaki, then Auckland, then Hamilton, and then it starts with Wellington again. And the president of the Swiss Society is 5 years president, and we have got a magazine.
Yeah, that's not the Swiss Revue. That's not it.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
We've got a monthly magazine where we all have got club news. Yes. This is the Swiss government. Sends to every Swiss which is registered in an embassy anywhere in the world. Every 3 months he gets a magazine, a news sort of letter for things which that's the
and this is the New Zealand one.
That's the New Zealand
monthly
one.
Monthly magazine.
Yeah. Yes. Monthly.
Yes, monthly yes, magazine.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a substantial magazine, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there lots of you all together in New Zealand, or do you know how many?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've Swiss and Swiss descent would be many thousands.
Yeah.
But otherwise, maybe 1,500 or maybe more. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Naturally, all Swiss, all our children, all our grandchildren are all Swiss citizens and New Zealand citizens.
Dual citizens.
It's accepted in New Zealand, it's accepted in North America, many places accepted dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. And a Swiss never loses his citizenship.
Yeah.
They can go in North America, in Wisconsin, are some Swiss people which are actually 8th generation.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as the young parents register themselves, register their children before they are 20 years of age, then they're automatically Swiss citizens. They can even vote in Switzerland if they want to.
You really have a strong feeling for the homeland.
You don't really
want to lose that.
Yes.
No.
They always say, once a Swiss, always a Swiss.
Is that right?
I would say, once a New Zealander, always a New Zealander. For your heritage.
Don't give it up lightly.
If you travel, New Zealand is your home. It's always your home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, for us, we like it here, otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But we still talk about Switzerland of our home.
Mm-hmm.
But when we travel over there, we also come home again when we come back.
Yeah. You know? Yes, I understand. You know, of your mind, it's a very strong feeling for the land.
Yeah, yes.
You don't willingly give that up.
Yes.
You might have lost your little piece of land.
Yes.
It's the same feeling, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.